¡Vamos! Este podcast. Hello and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires. I'm your host, Jack. My brother Max is finally back from his vacation, even though it was only a week. Max, welcome back.
Thank you. This is like the first thing I have done after my vacation. I haven't gone back to work yet. This is the first thing that feels like non-vacation, in a good way, though.
So you were in Santa Fe, right?
Yeah, I was in Santa Fe. Okay. It was pretty sweet.
Well, according to TripAdvisor, here are the top three things that you can do in Santa Fe, and I want to know if you – did you see the Loretto stairs?
No, I did not go see those. Those cost $3, and they're not really great. So it's like, I'm not going to pay $3 to go into a church and see these stairs. That's lame.
You should lie to our grandfather if he asks, because I once had to listen to him talk about the steps for an hour. next, did you see the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum?
No, I didn't. I don't like Georgia O'Keeffe.
Okay. And did you go to the San Miguel Chapel?
No.
Max, what did you do in Santa Fe?
I was certain I did at least one, if not two, things that were going to be on your top three list. So I went to this thing called Meow Wolf, which is actually like kind of famous for Santa Fe, but it's a newer thing. It's like an interactive museum. It's pretty neat. You go to this thing, buy a ticket, you walk inside. I think they're going to make one in Austin and Denver. You go inside, and it's kind of like being in Maniac Mansion, the old video game.
Oh, my God. Not interested. Not interested. Too scared.
You go in, and it's like there's a house, and everything's interactive. And so there's this house, and there's letters that you read. It's about this family whose son disappeared, and that their daughter is trying to make some sort of, like, time travel device. And so part of the house is kind of like a normal house, but then if you walk in through the refrigerator, suddenly you're on this, like, kind of like fourth dimension other thing. And so it's this like everything's kind of like triply decorated once you're on like the other side, and there's like time travel stuff, and you know, like I said, it kind of feels like being in a video game. So it's this kind of, it's hard to describe though. I don't know if I'm making sense. Does this?
No, I mean, I've read two Philip K. Dick books in the last week.
Okay.
So we're on the same page.
Yeah. So I did that. I went to the Museum of Modern Native American Art. I forget the exact name, but it's something of that effect. And that was great. And I went to another modern art museum called Site Santa Fe. That was excellent.
Awesome.
So I did other museums, things like that. Didn't do the Georgia O'Keeffe. Don't really like her. And went to some other, actually, I may have got to this. Is the San Miguel Chapel the oldest Guadalupe? Yes,
exactly.
I did go to that. So yes.
Oh, nice. Okay. Whew, thank God. That. Now I believe you. Overall, did you like Santa Fe?
I did. There's a lot of like, there are different chapels and things like that in Santa Fe, so I got confused about which one was which. But yeah, yes.
Definitely highlight the chapel visits when talking to Grandpa. All right. Well, while you were away, it was sort of bad news week in American soccer. First, we had NASL suspending operations for the year. And I feel like the writing's on the wall that perhaps this is indefinite. And their lawsuit against the USSF is not going well. Very sad. Jordan Morris out for the season.
Yes.
Really threw a wrench into the Sounders plan, especially because the week before I was talking to Harrison Crow of American Soccer Analytics, and he was saying, barring any unforeseen injuries, the Sounders have a chance. And we definitely saw that attacking sort of impotence in their first game against LAFC, but more on that later. Barco out for the next 3 to 4 weeks. Once again, we'll speak more on that later. And then for me, the most importantly and most terrifyingly, the U.S. bid is looking less and less like a sure thing. Morocco is apparently gaining votes. Sepp Blatter has come out and kind of crapped on the U.S.-led bid, generally accepted that the sort of the change in tides is anti-Trump. So we'll see. Were you on vacation? Were you following any of these stories?
A little bit. I was trying to like unplug, but part of my unplugging is more like work related, and still plugging into soccer is fun. So I followed along a little bit with the soccer news, and obviously all of these pieces of news were all over the place, so I couldn't help running into them and reading about them. So I think to start with the World Cup one, that was disturbing, but I've heard kind of mixed things about it. I've heard it's easy to overreact about one person kind of, you know, like writing these stories and saying that, oh, the U.S. bid is in jeopardy, blah, 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 blah. Because, you know, like it's makes it more of a news item if you say it's something like that, rather than just being like, well, the U.S. is still sitting in the cap rate position in this for this bid. And maybe it's like under threat, or maybe there's some grumblings about it. But, you know, when it comes down to it, bottom line, U.S. is still in a really strong position. So I don't have enough of a real good sense of like how to actually interpret that item of news. I don't know if it's just people trying to cause trouble and make a story out of nothing, or if it is really substantive. Yeah. What's your read on that?
My immediate reaction was sort of, I think I said it on Twitter once, about sort of like the arrogance that we had in CONCACAF being translated into the arrogance about our bid, that it, of course, it's a sure thing. And that sort of, any sort of sure thing mentality makes me very nervous, because it's not over until it's over. It's not granted until it's granted kind of thing. Strangely enough, what has made me feel better, and maybe these things aren't related at all, but in my mind they are, is that Mexico has suspended their own pro-rel for 2 years. They're still going to have promotion, but no relegation. And what I had heard is that Infantino was unwilling to give USA the World Cup because of the current system in place in the MLS, the fact that there is no pro-rel. So mm-hmm. I think it makes our bid much stronger now that Mexico and the United States are both operating in not the same exact way, the leagues, but more or less very, very similar. I know that.
Could you say the opposite, that now, you know, Mexico not doing a pro-rel thing makes us weak in front of FIFA?
I don't think that the animosity is there for Mexico.
Okay.
And I think that.
I see. So you see it as a solidarity kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. I do. And I think that. I honestly think if Mexico were to make this bid alone, they would have a better shot of the USA or Morocco. So, But I'm feeling better about it. Perhaps that's because it's been a few days or almost a week now since that news broke. But we'll see. How do you feel about the NASL suspending operations?
I mean, obviously it stinks. I hesitate to have a really qualified opinion about the NASL, because it just seems that there's so much about the economics that I don't quite have a handle on and don't know exactly how to interpret, even stuff as far as like what players, what position this puts players in. I mean, I've heard that teams are honoring their contracts and that sort of thing. So that is good. I don't know. And it seems that some of the ownership maybe in the NASL has been arrogant and planned poorly financially, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
I think, I mean, obviously it depresses me. It depresses me, and then I see that the USL has announced Division 3, and that makes it even feel more slimy, that it feels like they forced the NASL out, and now they have this Division 3 that only have two teams right now. So it just feels gross altogether, but then I just wish that there was an olive branch extended to the NASL. Like, okay, you have a division with three with two teams, right? And there's nine teams in the NASL. Just let them play in the USL D3, right? Like, there's a way to resolve this where all those players on all those teams get to play this year, where they're not losing a year of their playing careers. But I also understand that, like, you don't want to work with the enemy. It's just sad.
It is sad. It seems like if I can spin this into a metaphor, that American soccer is like always showing you how the sausage is made.
Oh, God.
You're always seeing the kind of, the gross inner workings of things. And it's like, frustrating and need to say no more.
Well, let's move on to some, I have this under good news ?
Okay.
I've had a lot of complicated feelings about this, but Ohio Attorney General has sued to keep the Crew. Good news?
Yeah.
?
Yeah, that was something I wanted to discuss as well, too. If you haven't read this, I figure most folks have at least heard grumblings about this before news broke that this was going to happen. When the Browns left Cleveland, there was Ohio passed a law that sports teams that accepted public money couldn't relocate without giving, I think it's something like 6 months notice. I'm not 100% sure about the timeline, but something of that effect. And so the fact that the pre-court ownership group has attempted to do so has spurred the state of Ohio to file a lawsuit against MLS and the Crew ownership. And they're able to do so. In this lawsuit, they claim, the parts of the claim are, I've got them in front of me here, that the crew ownership group accepted $5 million in state tax-funded funded improvements to their parking facilities, accepted state property tax exemption. The land that they leased was from the state and at a low market rate, and they accepted more than $300,000 in taxpayer reimbursements for doing some of the water work involved there, and that there is some tax financing stuff that goes beyond my understanding of accounting, which is zero. So anyway, the point is that, like, as an entity, the Columbus Crew had tax benefits, low-cost financing from the state, and taxpayer funds from the state. And because of this, the law in Ohio says that you can't just move, get up and move anytime you want. That because the state of Ohio has, in essence, has supported you as an organization, you now have they have some say. You can't just like cut and run, take the money and run. And so this is a really interesting tidbit. The thing about it, though, is that the state of Ohio has just filed this lawsuit, which doesn't mean that it doesn't mean a lawsuit will actually happen. Mm-hmm. It has to go to a judge, and there has to be some initial work to decide whether or not there's enough merit in this lawsuit for it to take place. And I think the preliminary dates for like for a hearing are like in 2018. So it's still really far down the road.
On the first day of the cruise season next year.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I don't understand all the law. I shouldn't speculate. But, I mean, I think so. It's far down the road. A lot can happen between now and then. You know, it's possible that pre-court can still move or something can happen. I guess it's, you know, before next season is a really quick timeline for that to happen. But big things could still happen. And you know, the state of Ohio can take more legal actions to prevent those things from happening. But it's an interest. It is definitely big news for this, and no doubt that you know, the legislature or the, you know, the state attorney in Ohio, in some ways, has probably felt empowered to do so by the Save the Crew movement. So, you know, in some ways, good work by those people to keep this issue top of mind and to keep pushing for this.
Yeah.
But yeah, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think it's good news?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this, mostly just because of some comment on Twitter when I was watching the Crew game. Some MLS in Austin group, I tweeted something like, when will the Crew's goals stop feeling like justice? And they said, when they start playing, you know, in Texas, you know. And I was thinking about the two groups of supporters, the MLS in Austin people and the Save the Crew people, and mm-hmm. You know, I don't have anything against either side, but then I was also thinking, well, clearly I intuitively want the Crew to stay in Columbus, and I live in Austin, I'm a huge soccer fan. I really like the people that we've talked to from the MLS in Austin. I'm not the biggest fan of MLS to ATX, the sort of necessary. I forget how Andrew Irvin explained it. The kind of
the pre-court funded or pre-court supported starter group in Austin, in a sense, if we understand that correctly.
Exactly. It all feels gross to me. He's not an owner that I want. It would be a really hard team for me to back. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand how the Austin community is sort of willing to look past just garbage behavior on the part of Anthony Precourt. But I also know that their desire for soccer is totally valid and understandable. Yeah. At the end of the day, though, I have to say I really want the Crew to stay. I also understand that Precourt has to give the opportunity for the city to buy the team, right? Or that they, like, he set the price at like $1 billion, and the city would have to find some ownership group to take it over. Some sort of permutation of the lawsuit is what I was seeing.
Yeah, and given the fact that it's a lawsuit, which doesn't mean that, like, wow, bang, suddenly things are going to happen. It just means, like, oh, there's another new long-term angle that this – a new battlefront that's opened up, and now people are going to be fighting here as well as fighting in other places. So it's something to watch in a new legal entanglement that's going to take a long time for us to make heads or tails of how valid Ohio's claims are, if it's going to just create – potentially a different bargaining chip too, which is another outcome. So that maybe this lawsuit, nothing comes of it, but the fact that Ohio can hold this over the Precourt ownership group creates a different way for them to bargain with them.
Yeah, it's also, at the end of the day, it's pretty fucking cool that the Ohio Attorney General wants to keep the Crew. It just wants to keep soccer in Ohio. Like, I think that's dope.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm happy about it. Moving on to, well, actually, you know what? We had some bad news. Let's do our three in, three out. So every week we choose three players that we would sub in and three players that we would sub out. Max, what should we do? Do you want to start with the bad news first or the good news first?
Let's alternate them.
Oh, perfect.
So
yeah.
Why don't you give me someone you're putting on the field and I'll give you someone I'm taking off.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I would say Timothy Weah, somebody who made his pro debut for Paris Saint-Germain, did not look out of place at all, nearly scored a goal. It was, I mean... Oh my God! Everyone loves a good hype train, and I saw like what Scuffed was saying, how he thought, you know, maybe Timothy Weah wasn't ready for this, and I mean, when I saw him on the bench for the game, I thought, oh man, this makes me nervous. But as soon as he got onto that field, he belonged, and he looked so dynamic on that flank. It was great. If he would have scored that goal, can you imagine the number of ESPN FC articles written about it? Can you imagine how much people would be flipping out right now? Suddenly we'd have some sort of like striking partner for Pulisic, and he might be in the future. He might be leading our line. I think that's certainly the expectation that people already have on him. But just really exciting, great young American player.
Plus, you just know that I'm a fan, so I know how fans think. If he scores a goal, there's going to be tons of like PSG people who are like, play him, play him, play him. He scored. You know, like any team you cheered for, whenever a young kid scores in their debut or scores early on, that's the impression they have of the player. And obviously, Weah has tons of backstory, tons of impression going into it. People are probably really high on him, but if he makes that initial first impression, it's going to be harder and harder for people to explain away not playing him. So making that a good first impression would be huge.
Yeah, some like basic things are, you know, son of the great George Weah, now president of Liberia, but he wants to play for the U.S. He is on one of the top five teams in the world, and he's going to start getting playing time. That is, like, we're so excited to have Pulisic on Borussia Dortmund. PSG is a better team than Borussia Dortmund. And Timothy,
yes,
especially this season. So we should. I mean, I think we sometimes forget we look so far in the future that sometimes we can't actually enjoy the present for what it is.
A counter argument to that, though, mm-hmm. PSG much better team than Dortmund. However, that also means that the expectations are higher and the players don't have as much wiggle room. They're not performing. The microscope's going to be on them. That kind of thing. So. PSG is not the kind of team that's going to be like, oh, yeah, we'll run with this player for a few months or for half a season and, you know, blah, 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 blah. They're going to be, especially in an attacking position like that, they're going to have, like, plenty of people waiting in the wings and plenty of potential transfers coming in to take away a spot. So, which is also good for him, really high-pressure environment for him to thrive in. So in some ways, it's a mixed bag, I'd say, to be fair.
Fair enough. Let's see. Who's your first player out?
Well, I was gonna pull out the Precourt ownership group, but we already discussed that. So, but I've got plenty of other negatives, so don't worry.
It's also fine to just have a positivity overload.
No. Okay. This first one, it may seem strange to you, but I want to take off Jill Ellis, U.S. Women's National Team coach, and I know that's like kind of harsh. The women had two games in the She Believes Cup, won the first, tied the second. I just wanted to, not necessarily that I'm super low on Ellis, but she has had frustrating results. Granted, women won the World Cup in 2015. It was bomb. It was awesome. But then quarterfinal results in the Olympics, bombing out of the She Believes Cup last year, and having a performance so far, which is frustrating to watch. The weather conditions were awful, granted. But watching the game, the women were really, they lacked a sort of cohesion in the midfield, which has been what they've struggled with. Where basically what they're doing is, it reminds me a lot of like the aughts U.S. basketball team, where it basically was like, hey, we've got the best athletes in the game. We'll throw them all on a court together, and obviously they're going to win because they're all stronger, faster, better than everybody else. And then we start losing to the Spains of the world. And I think the women are really at that point where they're relying so much on the athleticism of certain players. And it's getting to the point where we don't quite have the cohesion and like in the midfield especially, and we don't have that sort of like tactical structure to actually like outplay people sometimes and not just outmuscle them. And it's been frustrating to watch that. And you just feel like we're relying on this kind of like really fast counterattacking speed from Mallory Pugh or from Megan Rapinoe. And it's frustrating because you know that the team deserves much better than that. And so I just wanted to take one of my three outs to express my frustration watching those games. Even though Ellis has gotten pretty good results so far, it hasn't been the easiest games to watch and leaves me with questions.
All right, fair enough. My second player in would have to be, I think we did it last week, but I don't care, Aaron Johansson. The rebirth continues. Scored the equalizer against Borussia Mönchengladbach, a.k.a. a German club, in the 79th minute. It is just, he hits that ball so hard. I felt so much catharsis for him watching him. He's you know, a yard away from an open goal. I guess the goalie's there, but so not really an open goal. So never mind, I'm lying to you already. But I just want this. It just felt so good to see him hit that ball so hard. It's the dumbest possible critique of anything, but just knowing the frustrations that he feels, knowing how his career has sort of had this intense dip in the last year or two, and seeing him start to score goals off the bench for Wolfsburg. Werder Bremen. Makes me so pleased. Comes out today, says he wants the starting job. He's happy being a super sub, but he says that's not what he wants. He wants that starting job back. And I think, I mean, he's making the argument. I don't see how you can't give it to him, especially if he scores another goal in his next couple sub appearances. We'll see. I mean, it would not surprise me, and I don't think it would surprise anybody else if he began starting games.
Yeah, I as like you said, another week with him on our three in list is great. I hope there are many more weeks like that. It's great to see him get back for him, and yeah, like he keeps playing like this, getting assists, getting goals. I mean, it's hard to make an argument for benching him.
Yes.
All right, nice work, AJ.
Give us some bad news, Max.
So I'm taking off Mike Petke's sweater situation. I watched the Dallas.
I have
and
no idea what you're talking
Lake.
About.
I took screenshots of this. I was going to send them to you.
Oh, you should.
It's absurd. So, like, okay, first of all, Real Salt Lake is playing in Dallas, and it's warm in Dallas, and the players are like sweating bullets.
Yeah,
all the fans are like, you know, chubby white people like us in cargo shorts and t-shirts. And you can picture the scene in Dallas, right? And then like cut to the sidelines. And Mike Petke is wearing suit with a sweater underneath it. And his sweater has lapels on it, which go out and over the lapels on his jacket. He's absurd. And then second half, he took off the coat, but kept the sweater on. And also Oscar Pereira also wore a sweater. So it was like, it was the sweater battle. And I feel like with both managers having sweaters, no surprise the game ended in a draw, right? Equal tactics.
I mean, Dallas is, you know, a few hours north of here, but it was hot in Texas this weekend. It was 87 today.
Yeah.
So
it was like, I think it was 70 at game time, if I remember correctly, something like that. It was, but and also just, you know, Mike Petke, I mean, he also just has this aesthetic of angry stepfather.
Oh, God.
And
he's also, like, yeah.
Yeah, and he's throwing a tantrum at some point on the sidelines in his sweater. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, yeah. And listening to him give interviews, he has this, like, New York or New Jersey kind of accent. And it just gives me, like, this... I wouldn't say flashback exactly, but I just feel like there is this style of American soccer coach with Arena and Bradley that have this particular accent.
Yeah.
And Peggy is just totally like that. So, I shouldn't say that I'm taking off his sweater because that sounds a little too personal, but he gets a thumbs down for that sweater from me.
Yeah. So, some sort of like sweater game of chicken.
Know the
between.
Weather.
Yeah.
On the sidelines.
I think it's a mental game. I think Pareja saw what he was wearing. He's like, oh. I'm not taking mine off. My last person that I'd like to bring in is CJ Sapong. I set up the first goal for the Union while being pulled down onto his back by the defender. Is flat on his back by the time the ball reaches his teammate. Scores a second goal from a similarly whipped in ball to the box. Does a great job controlling it. Does a good job of sort of drawing the red card foul, which I know might sound strange, but if you go back and watch the red card in the Union game, Sapong knows that the foul is coming, and he's also aware that he's the last man. And the contact is coming, but he knows that when that contact comes, he's going to lose this ball, right? And he doesn't like flop, but he creates more contact. And so by virtue of scoring a goal, setting up the other goal, and drawing a red card foul, he is the most influential man on the pitch. I love seeing performances like that from him. Really good job.
Yeah, I was listening to a game the other day, and the commentators were talking about drawing fouls as a stat you don't necessarily want to like lead in. And I was like, what? I mean, I understand the sentiment behind that, but actually I think that that's a kind of like, for lack of a better word, CONCACAF-y and mm-hmm. technical skill that we could really use more of as a soccering country.
Undoubtedly.
And I think that's something that like Pulisic does fairly well. He doesn't always get the calls in CONCACAF, but he's really good at doing sort of anticipatory positioning to draw contact.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I do appreciate that when I see players pulling that off. We need more of that.
Yeah, I loved watching Sapong play this weekend, so it was good. Who's your last person that you're taking off? If it's Oscar Pereja's sweater, we can just skip it.
No, but it's Kyle Beckerman's hair. At first, I was totally in favor of the no longer dreadlocks because
from the outside, that's the best decision he's ever made.
Right. Then I watched the game and he like missed a wide open cherry pick header. And I was thinking it's got to be because suddenly he's got a whole different like orientation to his head. His gyroscope is way off. I mean, he's like 3 pounds lighter upstairs. And he misses this header. I can't think it's coincidence.
I mean, the weight is all off. He's throwing it forward too quickly, right?
Yep, exactly.
There's no drag. So congrats to Kyle Beckerman for making a good decision. But,
yes.
But, yeah, it'll take him some time.
I was starting to think, like, I wonder how, like, I saw on Twitter some people were doing kind of, like, how... The question was like, how does MLS rank against other leagues? And there are a bunch of different numbers. It's the 12th best league, or it's this best league, whatever. And I started to think about like how MLS ranks against other leagues in terms of hair, because I think we really kind of lag behind on hair. We definitely have a few Kyle Beckermans.
Yeah.
Who you're like, man, this person really looks like an American soccer player from 2003. And like we need to, the younger generation is definitely upping their hair game. Which I appreciate, but there's still some stalwarts there.
Yeah, I would invite anybody out there and to watch a Chivas game and take a look at that hair. I don't know what the hell is going on, but that is a lot of pomade. It's a lot of product for Chivas, but I'm cool with it. They're all very handsome, so
yeah,
good for them. Well, Max, we have been doing this show. I think this is our 15th. No, it's longer than that. Anyways. We started the show in the playoffs of last season. This is our first time we've ever had a show where the regular season is actually going on.
Pretty sweet.
So many terrible things have happened in the world of soccer, and I'm surrounded by negativity, and I emit buckets of negativity as well, not making it any easier, that I just forgot on a basic level how much I love watching soccer, and I was so excited for the beginning of the season. And the first weekend of games did not disappoint. I've got recaps for every game. I can go through them. Or Max, what was your what did you watch and what did you enjoy most?
Well, you know, like I do want to talk about Dallas and Real. So, like, obviously, yes. Mentioned a couple of folks from that game already. That game caught my eye, as I'm sure it did for you, because of the sort of potential young players that we were going to see and ended up seeing for the most part in that game. Kind of gave us an opportunity to scout a few players: Danilo Acosta, Reggie Cannon, and Justin Glad in particular. So that was an interesting game for me. Obviously, it was also interesting to see how Dallas bounced back from CONCACAF Champions League ousting. And and obviously all of the CCL stuff itself is an interesting thing to talk about too. That's definitely what I want to talk about. How about you? What game stood out for you this weekend?
Definitely Dallas versus Real Salt Lake, the Revs in Philly, Columbus, Toronto, LAFC, Seattle, Atlanta, and Houston. But let's start with that Dallas game. I have loved watching Urruti this preseason and into this first game. He creates so many chances, and he cuts through that defense so easily. I mean, he doesn't always do the best job of finishing the chances, but, man, I am a big fan of his game. Dallas, very vulnerable on the counterattack, as always. Saw that midweek in the CCL as well. What did you notice most about Dallas and Real?
Yeah, already those two things you mentioned, the counterattack and Urruti, lots to talk about there. So let's, because we saw with the two goals that were in the game, the Real Salt Lake goal came off of a counterattack that was scored against Reggie Cannon, got sort of crossed over or cut back, and that created the angle that allowed Real Salt Lake to score from. So that was a chance for us to see Reggie Cannon getting overrun by Plata and showing his youth a little bit in that situation. Yeah. Then again, Urruti obviously sort of scored the goal. It was an own goal technically, but he he didn't quite create that. He cleaned up a little bit, or what actually ended up happening is Danilo Acosta panicked and gave up possession. So a negative moment for another young player there. Urruti got the ball, drove down, found a little angle and just blasted through, and it ended up going on an own goal off the Real Salt Lake player. But that was, like you said, those two things were big parts of the game. But overall, it was a frustrating game maybe for Dallas. More shots on goal. They looked the better team, yes, even if Real Salt Lake looked strong in possession. And I liked a lot of the way that Real Salt Lake was actually playing. They were playing kind of patiently and out of the back, and their defense actually looked pretty solid. But Dallas just wasn't quite finishing their shots. But you have to think if they play that game the same way a few more times, Dallas wins most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about playing your kids is that it's the inconsistencies. It's that getting crossed over by a seasoned vet like Plata that's going to happen. But Dallas believes in the project. I think we believe in the project. I definitely have a soft spot for Dallas. I also really like their jerseys this year. And maybe that's just because I've been living in Texas now for 6 months and I already have that Texan exceptionalism, but I don't think that's it. But I am so excited to watch Dallas this season. Real Salt Lake also looks great.
I thought that, to talk about young players, gotta talk about Justin Glad in that game too. Mm-hmm. We talk about inconsistency from young players, but man, Glad was really good. And he was really good in a lot of different ways that surprised me. Really, I mean, he looked like the best center back on the pitch, and he was calm. He recovered. He made Dallas's attackers take more difficult angles to the ball. Even when he overrun, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Urruti or Diaz or someone like that. Even when he kind of ran too far to cover up, he ended up kind of like circling back and getting behind Raimondo and creating a difficult passing or difficult shooting opportunity still for the player. And then him in possession, he was great. Really strong, didn't panic, really smart. And so just a really solid performance from Justin Glad. Really, really impressive dealing with a tough offense in Dallas.
Next game that I want to talk about was, let's do LAFC versus Seattle.
Yeah, what are your impressions of LAFC?
Holy crap! I had no idea I was in love with LAFC. I feel like such a I feel like such a tool, but I was so pissed when I thought I was going to miss this game because of ESPN playing whatever basketball game that was. Ended up rearranging my Sling TV subscription so that I could get a ESPN Deportes and I could watch it. Man, I think I don't want to overreact to anything. I'm not going to say like LAFC is going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but this game was so much fun to watch. Seattle was actually had a good game. I think if they would have been a little bit luckier with their chances, the game could have ended 2-1 Seattle. But Carlos Vela has free range in the middle of that pitch, and it was a joy to watch. His assist for Rossi, for that Rossi goal, is like a pinpoint nutmeg through Roman Torres' legs. Just beautiful. And also an incredible first goal for the franchise. An incredible away win for the franchise against one of the most respected teams in the league and have been for a while. For the Sounders, Lodeiro looks still amazing. He keeps getting better and better. Lots of low balls into the box, but no one on the receiving end. What I noticed is that LAFC, the back four, was playing very, very narrow and kind of giving Seattle those wide spaces. They just, I assume they thought Simon and Zimmerman were going to be able to deal with any crosses that came in, so perhaps that's what forced those low balls in. And, you know, it felt like a gamble, honestly, from LAFC, but Simon looked so good. Really an incredible game. I hope that he rubs off on Zimmerman, who is not as consistent. But, man, LAFC is here. That game was a ton of fun to watch. I am so excited for Carlos Vela. I just want Chicharito to come and join him so badly.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I would lose it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I would lose it, though. I'm totally on board for the product they're selling me. And I don't care how toolish that sounds.
Offensively, how did you feel about Bradley's tactics in for LAFC? When what do you see that? Like, how would you? How would you summarize those tactics? And do you think that's what they're going to use going forward?
Well, I think it's interesting because Seattle also rested a couple of players. Sorry, I was drinking tea. They rested a couple of players, I think, with the Chivas game in mind, and the Champions League. So it's not a full strength Seattle. I think being the first competitive game, I don't know if I want to make too much of the tactics. I think like that very narrow back four was one of those things. Like, okay, let's just stay solid. You know, like let's give them the space. Let's just try and communicate. Let's just try and not fuck this up, basically. But they weren't that adventurous, right? Like all the adventure moving forward went through Vela, and he was creating chances from right behind Rossi. So I don't know if it's a great strategy going forward. I don't know. I just don't know enough to say one way or the other. Because it's also like it's one game. I think it's a bad game to judge any sort of offensive tactics of Bradley.
They're still filling out their roster, so that makes sense. It looks like, yeah, like you're saying, that narrow back four, simplify the defense, you know, kind of like do what you know will work and do what you know with like the limited time you have with these players who haven't played much together.
Yeah, I mean, so
unsurprisingly practical tactics maybe from Bob Bradley would be a way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. Practical and relying on the creativity of, you know, his two best forwards moving forward. I would also say that Latif Blessing was tireless on that wing and just battled and created a lot of chances, drove a lot of balls in the box. Really fun to watch.
Awesome. So what other games stood out to you? We've mentioned CONCACAF Champions League, and we'll circle back to that because the Chivas Sounders game, it sounds pretty interesting. But what other MLS games really caught your attention?
I mean, I think we're going to have to talk about Atlanta versus Houston at some point, but yeah, let's just do it. I think I feel like even though we haven't been doing this very long, I shit on Houston all the time because no one's at their games, but the Dynamo fans that I have met are so hardcore and great people, and so I don't want to have this explicit bias against Houston having an MLS franchise, but it is embarrassing to watch a home opener against the most popular team in the league. Or at least one of them, certainly. I think you could make the argument that they're the most popular team in the league at this time, especially for hipsters. And your stadium is half empty. There's just all these empty seats. It looks stupid. But to their credit, they chopped Atlanta United down. 4 goals in the first half, defensively solid. I mean, DeMarcus Beasley is like the Rafa Marquez of the United States. Last year, I think I was kind of annoyed to see him on the field. This year, I just think, dude, good for you. Just keep going. I hope he plays until he's 50. I want him to be the Robert Parrish of MLS. Atlanta, I mean...
To talk about Beasley some more, he's like the joke that is funny, then is not funny. But if you keep making it, eventually it becomes funny again. You're like, no, really, really, Beasley, you need to retire. No, actually, you've been doing it for so long. It's kind of impressive.
Like Beasley, you look like you kind of look like the keeper of the crypt. Like you,
Yeah.
like you're so waifish and thin these days. But whatever, good for him. Atlanta, they sort of looked like they did in the preseason. Sort of no rhythm, just not clicking. No Barco, but maybe most shockingly, in the absence of Barco, Carlton on the bench didn't get any time. Not even when the team was down by 4 goals. I think a lot of us would have enjoyed seeing him on the pitch. Just let him go out there. Let him do his crazy shit. Let him do his like his back heel flicks, his Rabona nutmeg failed attempt to actual nutmeg. I mean, it's the first week, so let's not set off any alarm bells. But I mean, all the credit in the world to Houston.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, hoping Carlton gets some minutes there, hoping for some weird back heel shit, as you said,
Yeah.
and just let the kids kind of run a little bit loose. If you got the game lost, just take it as an opportunity to learn something. But maybe there's something to be said for it being early in the season too, and that Tata Martino's like, well, I'm throwing the kids who I'm not sure are going to get a lot of minutes. Like, I'm sticking with the core of my group because they need to learn to play together too. So I could see that, but it is less exciting and probably the worst outcome you
Yeah.
could really have for an Atlanta fan.
Yeah. Let me run through some of these other. I don't want to miss any teams, just for the listeners. So San Jose 3, Minnesota 2. Generous score line for, or the score line is generous to Minnesota rather. The Quakes dominated most of the match. Minnesota scored 2 goals in the last 8 minutes. Pretty exciting. Danny Hosen for San Jose looked fantastic. Scored a brace, made intelligent runs. 27 years old, former IX and Fulham man. Posed, aware at all times. Orlando, DC, incredible atmosphere. Assad gets a red in the 40th minute for kind of like a jumping, spinning back elbow. So Orlando is down to 10 men, but manages to find an equalizer. Justin Meerham looked excellent on that right side. Early signs that he's going to be the signing of the offseason. Orlando is going to be so much fun to watch. Ended 1-1. LA Galaxy beats Portland 2-1. Two teams that already feel like yesterday's news going head to head at the StubHub Center. Messy first half kind of doomed Portland, lacked concentration defensively. LA claims all 3 points. NYFC versus Sporting KC, Sky Blue Derby, ends 2-0 for NYCFC. David Villa creates the first goal, and the second was sort of this beautiful flowing break with ended with Jesus Medina scoring a goal on his debut. Vancouver versus Montreal. Alphonso Davies, the first MLS player born in the 2000s, scored his debut professional goal. 17 years old, and he looks like it. But watching the joy on his face as he celebrated that first goal was heartwarming. Even though it was against a team that I have a lot of respect and also a soft spot for. Also, Davies set up Kai Camaro's first Whitecaps goal. So great game from Davies all around. Too bad he's Canadian. Remy Gard's Remy Gard's Montreal. They will concede a lot of goals this year. And the big question is, do they have the ability to outgun opponents? Sadly, not this week. Revs versus Philly. Cropper out with illness, but apparently the 20-year-old Matt Turner is going to be Brad Friedel's number one choice between the sticks. Revs less than fresh after being chartered in from Rhode Island because of the wicked nor'easter. Made traveling very hard for them. Both teams missed absolute sitters. Anthony Fontana scores on debut. Brandon Bae, the combine stat-up, the only guy who finished in the top 10 of all combine categories, made his debut for the Revs. What did I miss? What did I miss? I think that's it. Overall, awesome first week in the MLS. And you wanted to talk a little bit about the CONCACAF Champions League. What are your thoughts?
At first, I think there's so much like fuss and fury about Colorado and Dallas. And then I was like, yeah. And then I looked at the game coming up and I was like, Seattle and Chivas is a really awesome game.
Yes,
And
Chivas not playing well, even though they picked up a draw against Club America in the Superclásico Nacional.
It's like, I'm actually pretty excited about that. Maybe we can get kind of like hot and bothered and have a little bit of that. And but that some of that is like American exceptionalism, assuming we have to win everything. Dallas lost on, away goals, a tiebreaker kind of thing. They put
Yes.
in a good performance ish in the second game, and so that happens sometimes, right? And I'm excited for the next round of the CONCACAF Champions League, actually. And so at first I was disappointed, but now actually seeing it, there's some games I want to watch, so yeah. I'm happy with that.
I mean, Tigres versus Toronto is
That's a huge game too. Okay, I'm going to say what you're going to say, which is that like the champions fighting against each other. That's huge.
Yeah, it's incredible, and
it's an amazing matchup. I mean, like all of that fuss about like MLS teams losing, and then you actually look at the next round, and you're like, wow, this is great.
Yes, Tijuana versus the Red Bulls. That's like a dream like FIFA video game kickoff mode, right? Like, I mean, there's three Americans on Tijuana right now. Hopefully, they get playing time. I don't think any of them. I mean, some of them haven't been coming off the bench, but we'll see. I cannot wait. I mean, I also want to give the MLS teams a shot. I haven't heard anybody say like, oh yeah, you know, like Seattle has no chance against Chivas. I am a Chivas fan. I have been watching Chivas since I was like 13. I think Seattle has a chance. Chivas are in shambles right now. And Lodero is going to cut up that back line because there's no communication. There's no defensive solidity in Guadalajara right now. Sadly, it kills me to say that. I do not want them to lose to Seattle. I want Chivas to beat them. I know it's, you know, divided loyalties. I don't care. But I do think that they have a shot. And I do think the Red Bulls have a shot against Tijuana. Toronto versus Tigres, hard to say.
Toronto's Tigres is fascinating. I mean, like, you're literally saying, like, hey, we've got the best team that MLS has ever had.
Yeah.
And we're putting them up against the most recent Liga MX champion to see how they fare. That's just a fascinating game to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hope that game garners the attention it deserves. Because it seems like...
It should be huge.
Yeah, and it could be a huge statement as well if Toronto pulls it off, right? Like, suddenly, like, I know, like, winning the whole Champions League maybe looks better, but champion versus champion meeting this early in the tournament sort of hides the fact about, like, what a big deal this is. If Toronto beats Tigres, we're saying our champion is better than your champion.
Absolutely, and if they do beat Tigres... It immediately, even though it's early in the tournament, suddenly you're thinking about Toronto, like, just adding, I mean, just having, like, the best possible 12 months a team can have.
Yeah. That's
true.
And,
I mean, that would be, yeah, it would just be such a huge storyline.
How does this bracket work? Is it possible for Toronto and Seattle to meet in the final?
I do not know.
Good question. Do they draw it every round? I'm not quite sure.
Let's do a deep dive into that for next week.
Yeah, I do think Club America might be the favorites at this point, but I still think MLS team's got a shot. I will be watching. I mean, it's also great because, well, I mean, the nice thing is that the games aren't on simultaneously. You can watch them all.
Yes, online. And they're good.
Yes.
You're gonna watch these games. It's gonna be fun.
So what's your game? So do you want to pick a game for the game of the week?
What do you mean? Which game I want to be paying attention to next week?
Yeah, either CONCACAF Champions League or MLS.
I mean, I think I do think the Toronto Tigres. I just have to say which of those games I'm most interested in, but it's a really hard choice because I feel like in my heart I think Tigres is better enough than Toronto that they might. That game might be less compelling, but then I think then the Seattle game, Seattle Chivas is just so cool. It's a cool game.
All of those matchups are just cool.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a cool game.
Max, are we Chivas. Fans of the CONCACAF Champions League? Are we fans of one of the most derided competitions?
That's what I'm saying. I was like, yeah. I've just been in this like spiral of negativity about things, seeing everyone like deride it. But then I actually like look at how it's played out, and I'm like, wait a sec. You know, like Deuce is going to be playing in Guadalajara.
Yeah, I don't have to wait like a month for the next round of games. Holy shit, awesome. The CCL is awesome.
Yeah,
we say this. All these games are going to be terrible. But
I know.
Whatever.
That's the thing. It's hard to know how it's going to shake out or what the roster is going to be like and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know which of those two games I'm most excited for. But I also like cholos a lot, as we talked about this podcast. So it's, it's there. It's hard. I don't have a good pick. But I think
you got to do Toronto Tigres. It sounds like that's where your heart's at. You're just afraid of
that. Is where my heart is. Yeah. I'm afraid to say it because it is putting it all on the line for an MLS team. And I'm not a particular fan of Toronto, but there's still so much on the line there. Plus, if you add to it the narrative that Greg Vanney is maybe one of these people who's thought about as a U.S. men's coach.
Yeah. I mean, he went to CCL. I have a lot more a lot more respect for that. I mean, not that I don't have respect for him right now, but suddenly
he's a coach that goes to Mexico and wins games.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
All right, so that's your pick. I'll pick an MLS game to sort of balance it out, although any of the CCL games are going to be fantastic. Let's see. Looking at the schedule right now. What do I want to do? I mean, LAFC versus Real Salt Lake is interesting because you want to know if LAFC can continue its run. Real Salt Lake looked really good. But yeah, it's also early in the season. I don't want to say like, oh, is LAFC just a flash in the pan? It's one game. It's one game. Who cares? What do I think is going to be the most entertaining game to watch? Yeah, I'll do Real Salt Lake, LAFC. I think it's going to be great. Watch for the Rossi-Vela combo. But yeah, that's what I'll do.
Good choice. Yeah, I think Real Salt Lake had some surprising counterattacking punch against Dallas. So when that game opened up, it was really fun to watch. So I can imagine LAFC having a similar sort of dynamic with Real Salt Lake. I could see that being a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the back four lines up because they cannot give Real Salt Lake that kind of space on the wings. The midfield was playing really, really compactly against Seattle this last week, so sometimes almost falling on top of each other. So Real Salt Lake is going to spread you out. So we'll see. I mean, but that is what I'm choosing. We'll get to see Justin Glad again. It'll be a good game.
Good pick.
Awesome. Well, I think that about wraps it up for us this week. Almost running pretty long, but welcome back, Max, from Santa Fe.
Thanks.
And all your chapel sightseeing and and your maniac mansion museum never ever go to.
Yes.
All right.
It's fantastic. I highly recommend everyone. If people are going to Santa Fe, let me know. I'll give you some recommendations. And get excited about CONCACAF Champions League. It's actually pretty cool.
It's true. And if you
turned out,
it's going to be awesome. If you think we're wrong, please tweet at us at Soft Tattooed Millionaires. You can always send us a hate mail or any hate mail, not a hate mail. If you have multiple, you can send as many as you want at softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Good night.